Hi there, Brendan.
Greetings, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast, episode 151. I should have gotten that crazy high-proof rum in order to have for my podcast drink. That would have been probably a horrible idea because it tastes like gasoline.
Can we cut in some Tech Nine? At the beginning, I don't think we have the rights for that.
Oh, we definitely don't have the rights for that. I guess it's a non-commercial podcast, so I'm sure there's some fair use doctrine that lets us use that. But as previously discussed on the Not a Thing podcast, neither of us are lawyers.
Yeah, we are not able to offer legal advice legally. I mean, actually, we can offer advice. I wouldn't recommend taking it.
Yeah, seriously, dude.
I gave advice on not taking my advice about legal matters.
Taking our advice for legal matters, not a thing.
It's your sentencing.
Well, the Not a Thing podcast is up and running, and we're back on Tuesdays. Amazing. At least this week. We'll see. We'll see how we do. In the meantime, thanks for all the new listeners and well-wishers that have congratulated us on our 150th episode. We're happy to keep doing it, keep making the episodes. Hashtag Flat Earth, hashtag Moon Tent. Do we have any other ones?
No, that's pretty much it these days.
Well, if you'd like to be a sponsor of the show and have us say a thing that you want us to say, or if you'd like to be on the show and tell us about a thing that you know stuff about, it'd be great. Just let us know via the normal channels. The HAL 900 on our website will be happy to take your request and forward it along to us. So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, let's jump ahead light years into the future, or the present, as it were, away from the HAL 900 to Cortana and all the glory that is the Windows 10 launch. Windows 10 launched last week, I think. We didn't talk about it, mostly because I didn't have a Windows PC to upgrade to Windows 10. And I actually still don't, because I realize that all the copies of Windows 10 that I have access to at work are enterprise versions, which are not currently being upgraded via the Windows 10 update app thingy. And I just don't have a legal copy of Windows 7 or 8 that I want to upgrade.
I see that little icon that popped up on my screen, and they'll pry my Windows 7 from my cold, dead hands.
Windows 7, you see, was Brendan's idea.
I didn't create it, Alan. I just perfected it. Oh, wait, no, that's Apple. Yeah.
Well, at least they would like to say that they did.
Right.
But Windows 7 and Windows 8, and I believe even Windows XP technically are all eligible for upgrade to Windows 10 for free, at least for a little while, as long as they're not the enterprise versions of them. And from what I understand, you could even update, because it doesn't do any kind of verification, you could even potentially update a pirated copy of all of those softwares in case you were one to have a pirated copy of Windows. I'm not sure if I need to really update all the Windows machines that I have access to, mostly because I'd rather not be first mouse on the new operating system. But there are a few places that have been first mouse, and they've discovered all sorts of stuff about Windows 10, one of which is that Microsoft is doing all manner of spying and tracking and keeping your data. It's a big surprise, or not, some researchers have looked at Windows 10 to figure out all the ways that they're in there. There's a, I think 12,000 page user agreement that you can read if you have like a few years and want to read an end user license agreement, in which it talks about the privacy policy, which pretty much says Microsoft has access to all sorts of stuff, location, use of your of passwords, all that kind of stuff. In addition, a lot of the features of Windows 10, they also have access to and can link to you. So some of those features are not limited to there's a user login kind of enhancement, I think they call it. I forget the exact feature name, but it uses the webcam to recognize who you are, and then if you're sitting in front of it, then it logs you in automatically, so you don't have to type or anything like that. Which means that your face is tied to that account and all of the other data that it can get, including but not limited to your emails, your browser history, your passwords, all that kind of stuff. So this one website has a pretty good breakdown of all of those things. Thankfully, Microsoft lets you opt out, or at least hopefully lets you, at least on the face of it, it says you can opt out of all of these things.
You've opted out.
Right. But the default is you've opted in for all of these things. If you do want to opt out, the article goes through the process of, I think it's 13 places in Windows where you have to check boxes or uncheck boxes more likely and opt out. That's one more reason I'd like to wait just a little bit. I feel like I'm sure the tracking data of Windows 10 will hopefully moderate. I think having an opt-in policy by default is bad, first of all, and second of all, will probably not stand up. I'm gonna guess that that gets kind of quietly turned off after a couple software updates. Oh, by the way, software updates are now mandatory with Windows 10. You can't selectively turn updates off that you don't want. Windows 10, I don't know.
Windows 10, we'll see.
Yeah. I actually am still running Windows 7 in most of my lab environments that I have. I build things for folks to use, and I usually build Windows 7 because I don't have touch-enabled things, and I think Windows 8 looks good and works well as a touch-enabled interface. I'm assuming 10 does also, although supposedly they've kind of backed that off a little bit and they've made it a little more friendly. I think people are still used to the Windows 7-ness of things, at least among the people that I interact with for work.
The people again, who want to work with computers.
Then again, most of the people that's most of the people that I interact with for work that have to use Windows. The majority of the people that I work with actually use Macs. Whatever. Windows 10. The only thing that I'm kind of interested in from all of those feature sets, I think, is Cortana, actually. I like the idea of a natural language interface, but I mostly just want to try it to see how the fidelity is for how it works, because I've used Apple Siri kind of quite a bit on my phone. Mostly when I'm driving, because you shouldn't look at your phone while you're driving, but it's good, you know, if you want to text people or get directions. It actually works fairly well. I just find that I have to say everything like 3 times.
So, that sounds like it doesn't work well, Alan.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. And it also, the thing that I actually like the most is that if you if you get a new text or a new message, you can have Siri read it to you, but only if it's flagged as new, and it only does it once, unfortunately, because it's really hilarious, because sometimes you can get Siri to say really silly and or dirty things if people text you, that kind of thing. It happens to me in the car. It's like, hey, Siri, read my texts. And then I get, you know, string of obscenities. It's fun. If you know my my cell phone number, please do text me during drive time hours.
Oh, that was a mistake, Alan. You gravely miscalculated, because I have your phone number.
having a computer read dirty things is always a thing. I remember ages ago, this was on like DOS. Do you remember DOS? You probably are a little too young.
I remember DOS.
Okay, all right.
I'm not that young.
Kids these days, right? Anyway, DOS.
Okay, thank you. I sound young.
there was a command line like speech synthesis thing, and I remember it because it was essentially, and this is, I'm reaching here for kind of analogies, but this was when computers didn't have like speakers built into them, and so it had a this was the what was it called, the Disney Sound Source. Wow. it was a Disney product, and they marketed it with a couple of their games that you hooked it to your computer, and it was just a speaker, really, because the speaker that came with most computers only did beeps. So if you wanted it to do anything like play music, you had to have a separate thing to play music. I'm going way down this rat hole, but trust me, it's worth it.
It's not even a rabbit hole, it's a rat hole.
So someone made a text-to-speech program, and they programmed it with some basic kinds of sounds, and what you could do is if you strung them together with this speaker, you could make it say words, and the things were all phonetic, so you couldn't just type words. You actually had to type the phonemes for the different things. Like to say hello, it's like the H sound with the E of the hello, but not the E of like he. So you had to put in all the vowels and consonants and then have it kind of say words. And I remember, I must have been like 10 at the time. And I remember my brother and I having like an afternoon of fun making the computer swear. It was the best.
That computer did a dead on Stephen Hawking impersonation.
But other than that, I'm not sure I would use Windows 10 unless it was like presented to me on a new computer. I'm not sure I'd upgrade unless people were really looking for it in the computers I have access to, especially not with all of the tracking information kind of built into it. And I'm actually going to transpose a couple stories we're going to go to, because I think that leads really well into a story from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, a group that we're definitely fans of here on the podcast. They released a fairly extensive policy for what they call do not track. So if you are a website that wants to enact a do not track policy for your users, for to kind of show that you believe in their privacy, or you believe in kind of data integrity, they have a fairly extensive template of that policy. Plus, the article will most likely link is about the meaning of all of those things and why they've gone to such extent to line out all of those different pieces of information. It's really interesting because they don't just talk about tracking with cookies, which is the normal kind of thing on the internet. And you can turn cookies off, and that will turn off a lot of the ad tracking and other data tracking that could be used for more than just selling stuff to you, but possibly tracking you for more nefarious purposes. They also talk about the existence of super cookies, which we've kind of talked about in different names on the show. We talked about some last week, but this is the use of multiple data sets in the aggregate in order to identify you. So last week we talked about using your typing as a way to fingerprint you. I think that's a pretty extreme example, but it could also use things like metadata, like what Wi-Fi you're on, plus the websites you're going to, plus the language you use must mean you're a whatever, that kind of data aggregation. So it's pretty extensive. I think it's a nice thing to put out there. Interestingly enough, at least one website, I believe it's medium.com, which is a blogging site, has a privacy policy and a do not track policy, which more or less follows the EFF's kind of guideline for it. I think it's a thing. If you don't want to be tracked, I think being able to opt out, if it's not a default, at least to have that as an option so you can opt out, is a thing. So having a nice little thing from the EFF there, they're continuing to fight the good fight for personal data integrity and privacy everywhere.
Freedom? And I have a problem with super cookies. They sound delicious, but they're not good for you.
Yeah, just I think. Regular. Yeah, right. I mean, they're honestly giving cookies a really bad name.
Why did someone have to choose the name Cookie?
I don't know. Actually, I think it's an interesting kind of
thing. For tricking old people. Oh, cookies are great.
So I want them, right?
Yeah, I want more, as many as I can get.
And it's odd to think that you're because the way that the cookie is made for is that it's kind of unique to you, and so that analogy really falls apart because cookies are, you know, generally very generic. They're made kind of in batches, and they're made like so they're all the same rather than having unique identifiers about who you are, what you're doing. So I don't know. I think we should take back cookie and only use it for the baked good that it is. And good is the operative word.
Yes.
Cookies are good. Cookies are a thing.
Cookies are a thing.
Also a thing in the food department is our spicy foods, chili peppers. Kind of specifically, I thank my sister for sending this one to the internet, such that I was able to see it. I got it mostly for the headline of the story because it mentions that spicy food can lower the risk of death. As most of the listeners know, we've mentioned the Benjamin Franklin quote that. The only things certain in life are death and taxes. Apparently, if you eat enough chili peppers, you can get out of that first one.
I don't know about getting out of it, Alan. You get to have it later.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I have gone on serious record multiple times. I really like spicy food. I'm not sure if that means I'm going to live forever, but it probably doesn't. But
why not assume?
Yeah, if it's going to retain my life for a little bit, that's great because I've been doing it for a while. I really enjoy spicy food, and I'm not sure if researchers have kind of isolated all the things. I think this is still at the data correlation stage to figure out that it is a thing, not necessarily why it's a thing. There's some theories, though. I know that one of them is that a certain amount of kind of response hormones are generated when you have spicy food. There's kind of a fight or flight response that comes from that. And generally, with any kind of fight or flight response, there's a corresponding kind of uptick in euphoric kinds of hormones. That's why there's a lot of kind of thrill seeking has a component of making you kind of happier at the same time as endangering you.
It's a hot drug, Alan.
I know that for spicy food, I think maybe my favorite instance of spicy food, or maybe not my favorite, but one of the clearest memories I've had of having really spicy food is there's a burger place that we've gone to, St. John's in Santa Clara or Sunnyvale, depending on which side of the street Lawrence is.
I mean, it's in the same side of the street because it's a building, Alan. That doesn't change.
But St. John's does a burger called the Beg for Mercy Cheeseburger. The burger patty itself is pretty normal, but it has pepper jack cheese, like a spicy mayo, and then the major spicy component is serrano peppers. And serranos are generally hotter than jalapenos, so you're looking at a pretty good spice profile. I remember the first time I had it, I really enjoyed it, and the second time I had it, there's some variability with peppers, but I remember eating it, and at one point I was eating it with Julie was with me, and at one point she noticed that I was just kind of staring off into the distance, and that's because it was so hot I felt like I was having a, you know, kind of out of body experience.
Far out.
So unfortunately the variability of that spiciness has changed so much that I actually have never had never had that kind of level of hot since then.
It'll happen again for you, Alan. Don't worry.
Yeah, still chasing that dragon.
Oh, and Lower Risk of Death is my easy listening metal cover band.
It's a pretty good name. I like that. I would go see that show. I do think spicy food is kind of interesting, because I feel like there's two distinct kinds of spicy for me. There's that kind of chili pepper spicy that is very common in, like, say, Mexican food or like Thai food. But then there's that kind of horseradish, clear your whole head spicy that you get from, like, wasabi and some other foods, and I like both of those. I don't like them together, though. It's a bit too much to have kind of a horseradish spicy and a chili pepper spicy. Let's not do that. But either of those other two, totally fine with me.
Well, you can hold up the spicy end of the podcast. I am the sweet side of the podcast. Sweet or savory?
Nice. Nice. Well, let's move from foods and to a different kind of consumable. This is a story out of, I believe it's Ohio, where there was a prison and a minor, I guess you could say, riot was caused because someone flew.
Can you have a minor riot?
A quiet riot, as it were.
No.
But at this prison, someone flew a drone, a quadcopter, over the prison and dropped a care package of, I believe it was alcohol, drugs, and knives.
And, no, it was, they had 5 ounces of tobacco, 2.3 ounces of marijuana, 0.2 of an ounce of heroin, which is 140 doses.
Okay.
Someone was going to have a real good weekend at the prison.
Yeah.
That's actually just what they recovered.
Oh, okay. So, and then there was a, you know, a scuffle, a kerfuffle, as prison guards tried to kind of contain the situation. Apparently, this is a this is not an unheard of thing. There are all sorts of precautions in place to stop people from like chucking things over the wall. Tennis balls was one of the ones I saw. I guess you could, you know, partially open up a tennis ball and throw a bunch of stuff in and huck it over the wall from a pretty good distance using a cannon. But using, this is the, I believe, first instance of someone using a quadcopter to do it. I'd heard of this for like model airplanes or RC airplanes and things to smuggle stuff into prison. I actually think it would be kind of interesting if what they did was they flew these drugs into the prison and then hovered over the prison and then filmed the ensuing kind of riot over
we
the
could do that.
Over the drugs.
Let's do it.
or you know, maybe not, because you know, they're not there for our entertainment.
At why just have just one drone? You should be the invasion of Normandy. Just cloud the skies with drones. You can't stop them all.
Yeah, it's coming. I'm sure it is. In the meantime, smuggling stuff into prison, probably not a thing. Smuggling stuff into prison and then filming it, sort of interesting, maybe a thing. I noticed over the weekend that it was there was a like drone videography kind of festival or something that happened recently, probably meaning there were tons of those little things flying through the air. So like just like you were saying, cameras attached, flying through the air. I'm sure there were all sorts of collisions and bad behavior with these drones filming all sorts of things, but possibly some cool footage of things that you are legally able to take footage of. Please not people.
Yes.
But in the meantime, drones. They exist. I still don't really like them. mostly because they're annoying. I feel like if it were at least just a little less annoying, it would almost be palatable. Really, really, I think this goes back to what we were saying last week. If I had one, maybe it wouldn't be that bad.
I'm a responsible drone owner.
Well, going from one kind of drone robotic thing to another kind, there was an interesting story in The Atlantic this week about robots and automation. So not necessarily for drones, but robots of a different kind. This is robots to do kind of tasks and jobs. And this is specifically talking about robots taking away our jobs. Something we've talked about on the show in the past. Generally, it's not a thing, except in the instance of convenience and safety. We've talked a little bit about how self-driving cars could be a thing, and I think for commuters, it's it's a good idea to get people kind of out of that mindset. We all have to do that. Let's not impose the attention spans into that. But what this noticed was that if you apply even just self-driving cars into a broader range, not just commuters, but people that do that as a profession, for driving as a profession, it's a very male-skewed job sample. Truck drivers, for example, are almost wholly male. And so if you introduce self-driving cars into that mix, or self-driving trucks, it's disproportionately unemploying men. And they noticed in this article that that applies to a bunch of things. So manufacturing, carpentry, things like that. Essentially, they kind of put it as a lot of these jobs are related to kind of force being applied in a blunt kind of way. It tends to be associated with men, which I kind of bristle at a little bit. But it also,
but looking at the numbers, it's true.
Yeah, it also mentioned that there are some professions where there is a disproportionate number of women in those jobs. So nursing was the example they used, and you can't automate that. You can do some diagnostic stuff via a decision tree, but it says that it could never be as nuanced as a person, whereas someone or something, you know, to build furniture could be automated because there's not a lot of nuance there if you're doing it according to a plan. And I think that's true. I think with broad strokes, this is true, and it will cause some job shifts as what they kind of put it in the article, that what is kind of loosely determined as women's work, men will have to do because their jobs are going to be taken by robots. I think that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. The only question I have is that will the robots be paid more or less than the women doing those jobs when the math breaks out?
I think probably less.
I think everyone will be paid less if robots take our jobs. So keep on the lookout for that. I think the best advice for people kind of not wanting their jobs to be taken by robots is to diversify a little bit, add a little more nuance into the thing you do.
This is the second week in the row we've spoken about men losing out to robots. There's that article about teledildonics last week. That's going to cost men more jobs.
Oh, yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Does that mean that just men won't work anymore, or that we'll have more leisure time?
Hopefully it means more leisure time. But more likely it means we have to get different jobs.
Yeah, that makes much more sense. Not free robot vacation.
if only. The robots have to take our jobs and make us wealthy at the same time.
Yes.
Then that's a thing. robots... from a story of robots doing well in relation to humans to a story of robots not doing so well. There's a robot that was made that was called the Hitchbot, and it's essentially just a robot, like kind of in the kind of humanoid, like shaped robot kind of form. It's really just a computer with kind of a vaguely humanoid shape that they've attached to it.
It's a trash can with arms, Alan.
They gave it kind of arms and legs, although it doesn't move on its own. Is the thing? It just has kind of a speech kind of program that can run, and it will do some response to voice and other input. But this was created to hitchhike. It was created as a thing. It would explain its purpose and kind of request that drivers would pick it up and then drive to like another town, maybe take some pictures with it. It would auto tweet and post its location. It had a GPS and it would upload that information every once in a while. And it successfully was sent around, I believe it was Germany and Canada. I don't know the time frames for those kinds of things. It must have taken kind of weeks. It was on the, it's essentially depending on the kind of weird open-mindedness of the people picking it up to go, oh yeah, I'll pick up this strange piece of technology and drive it to the next town and drop it off. Why not? And that worked, like I said, in Germany and Canada.
And the Netherlands.
And the Netherlands, but it did not work so well in the United States. It left, I believe it was Salem, Massachusetts. That was its point of origin in the middle of July, and it lasted all of 2 weeks. It was found in, I believe it was Philadelphia, vandalized. Yep. Specifically, it was decapitated, and it stopped uploading data, and they went to go to the last known location, and they took some really kind of awful pictures of the...
I'm really conflicted about the story.
The robot, yeah.
Because it's a terrible example of humans being terrible.
Yeah.
But I like seeing robots get destroyed.
Right, right. If hopefully humans have this much tenacity when robots, when Skynet kind of comes online, hopefully humans have enough tenacity to
I think if it had left going from Massachusetts to California, because mm-hmm. it was going to San Francisco, if it had left from San Francisco, I feel like it would have made it farther before it got destroyed. Like, it probably still would have gotten destroyed in Pennsylvania, but I feel like we would have made it farther. Nevada, Utah, Colorado, depending on the route it took.
Sure. Right.
It's the West Coast. We're much more relaxed. You need to get some momentum going. I think that was their mistake, going from the East Coast.
Yeah, not enough buzz, before it started getting around. I think there was one comment that I'd seen, thankfully this was a hitchhiking robot that, was kind of made in jest and not like say an alien race that wanted to check out Earth and its advanced scout was going to, test us by seeing how kind we are. I think that's maybe a specious argument, taking a few too many assumptions into play, but I'm kind of with you on this one. I think it is super sad that A, it got destroyed after 2 weeks, and B, it did completely fine in at least three other countries, but America is the one that busted it up.
Maybe they went to Philadelphia and they thought it was a Cowboys fan or Redskins fan or something. I don't know.
But
Will Smith left for a reason. That robot didn't make it to Bel Air.
Yeah, hopefully they'll try again. Maybe it'll do a little better now that people are a little more sensitive to the robot cause. Then again, maybe the people that are gunning for the robots are going to be out for it. So who knows?
John Connor strikes again.
As you may guess, the robot apocalypse is not a thing. So let's keep an eye on them. We don't have to decapitate them, but let's at least keep an eye on the robots as they roam around, trying to see this great nation of ours. So we're gonna pull the show together in back to Massachusetts, where the from where the robot left from. This is not about a robot, but about a chicken. So there's a a chicken that is part of someone would raise chickens partially for research and partially for, just fun of it, because they're chickens and they're kind of fun. But there's this one chicken that was born with a deformity, a messed up leg. The owner did not choose to turn that chicken into a meal. They decided they would try and give the chicken a second chance at walking around and everything else. And they're going to 3D print a limb to replace the broken part of the chicken's leg. And they will do they'll 3D print that limb and go through surgery to actually replace the deformed part of the chicken and then restore it to health. And apparently this is not only a viable thing to do, but B, not necessarily the first time they've done this. Apparently there was a rooster that had the feet or the toes of the chicken were frozen during a winter storm, and they replaced them with 3D printed materials. But this is kind of a bigger deal because it's a whole kind of leg.
You know how much it cost?
No.
$2,500 for a fake chicken leg.
Wow.
Eat the chicken. Just eat the chicken.
And that's not like
that's going against nature.
And it's not like you could turn that chicken leg into food afterwards, right? Because no. It's 3D printed.
How much is that going to be per pound when you eventually eat it?
Well, I think it's interesting from a limb replacement kind of point of view, that if you can do it in a chicken, in theory, you can do it in a more kind of larger, possibly more in more complex iterations.
Less delicious.
So it bodes well for the future of kind of limb replacement in other higher order animals. I don't know. Would you want, like, because it sounds like they were replacing it with essentially a normal kind of chicken leg. Wouldn't you want one of those kinds of, like, the prosthetic limb that's like a metal blade, kind of like those curved springy blades that
no, those turn things murderous.
Arguably, chickens are already kind of murderous. Cockfighting is a thing in some
places.
If
you broke your leg, a chicken would eat you. If you were trapped in a room with a chicken and you broke your leg, it would eat you. Hashtag eat the chicken.
And on that note, I think I'm going to go order up some wings. Brendan, I'm going to talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.